Jeff Bercy is a Canadian author and reviewer. His new book is called Verbatim, a Novel. It's set in a fictional province in Canada, and it's presented in the form of the Hansard. Bercy told Anne Strainchamps what the Hansard is.
Anyone who's familiar with the congressional record knows that there's a written record of what politicians say. And in every legislature, I imagine that there would be something that would, some organization, some division that would do the same thing. In the Commonwealth system, the parliamentary system, which means, to give a short list, the UK, Canada, Australia, and so forth, there's a division within each legislature. It's sometimes called Hansard, sometimes called parliamentary publications. And it's the written record of what is said in the House.
So you've basically chosen to write a novel in the form of essentially the congressional record?
I'm not as familiar with the congressional record as the Hansard, but let's say something like that, yes.
What inspired you?
I was working in Hansard in Newfoundland from 1990 to 2000. I finished the book in 95. I was kind of inspired by the environment that I was working in because I would hear politicians, well, each and every day, for many hours every day. And I thought, there has to be a way to capture this in fiction, and it has to be a way that doesn't go the boring route, which is trying to figure out what's in the backbencher's mind. I think that has been done many times. And I thought, let's discuss what people do in a legislature. Mm-hmm. So nothing that I would have special access to, but you yourself could visit the legislature, and it's quite a hopping place in Wisconsin at times, I understand. You could visit it.
It has been recently.
Yes, you could visit it and see for yourself what the members actually do on the floor. Mm. And I thought, I'll present that instead of presenting what's in the minds of people, because how we govern ourselves is really important to us. It's what we contribute to, and it's our civic obligation to know how we govern ourselves.
We should hear an excerpt in order to get a sense of it. Is there a bit you could read for us?
Sure. Which would you like me to read? A letter or a debate or something?
Oh, a debate would be fun.
Okay. Well, I can't read you both sides because I only have, I guess, a couple of minutes or something. But I'll read you a part of a member's debate. So this takes place in the House, and a member of an opposition party named Mr. Lewis is addressing the Premier, and he's telling him that the poor in the province are going to come marching into town out of desperation due to the economic state of this province in the 1990s. So I'll just launch in there. The 8,000 people will be heard from miles away, and you're going to hear them some night when you're lying in bed, stuffed like a pig with truffles, caviar, and champagne, sleeping with a heavy stomach and the TV flickering in the room, glasses of wine and nuts and fruit all over the place. The Premier of this land has to be well rested to make important decisions, and one night he'll be woken from a dream. He'll go to the front door, careful not to wake his wife, and before he opens it, the sound of boots will hit him. Oh, yes, no mistake. He'll stand there in the porch and think, "No, this can't be happening. I ate some bad clams or mussels, or the port was off." Soon it'll sink into him and he'll be petrified. He'll grip his thick bathrobe and say, "My God, it's the people. They're marching on me like the opposition said they would." Next thing, the Minister of Justice gets a phone call and she hears this panicked voice saying, "Send the riot police, the paddy wagons, the horses and dogs. Arrest them all for waking me, the Premier. Charge them with disturbing the peace, for anything, but get them off the street, out of the city. Beat them back into the miserable country where they come from." I see that happening, but it can be stopped. Create jobs, Premier.
That's fantastic.
Well, that's a nice response.
Oh, now some of my favorite bits actually have somewhat less content. There's just this constant back and forth during the question periods. And there's this thing, some of the honorable members, almost like a Greek chorus, you know, respond. Sometimes it's "hear, hear," and other times it's "oh, oh."
Well, we think of a legislative assembly, or you would think of your legislature down there, as a continuation of Greek democracy, even though what the Greeks of ancient times thought democracy was would look very different to us. But the Greek chorus, as you say, is certainly picking up on that, so that there is this "oh, oh, hear, hear," kind of tragic, modified tragedy, obviously. for what is occurring in the house. There could be things about a mining disaster, and people will go, oh, or shame, shame, or resign, resign. And this is the debased chorus that we have.
Well, aside from the amusement value of all of this, are there some deeper issues lurking here? I mean, are you concerned about the devolution of, you know, our governmental system?
I'm concerned and have been since I wrote the book about being interested in how we choose to be led. We go into a voting booth and we elect somebody. And what are our motivations behind that before we make the X? Do we want the noblest person? Do we want a person who we just think we're voting for because we like that party? What is our thinking process? That's one thing. But when the members are actually there conducting the business that they have said to everybody that they want to go and do, then they are part of a structure. And we are part of that structure because, I don't know if it's viewed down there the same way as it is here, but the house is our house.
Mm-hmm.
It's where we are. We have representatives. So if they are speaking on our behalf, then we should know what they're doing. And if we agree with them, then that's great. And if we don't agree with them, why don't we? And what would we do differently? I think looking again at how we govern ourselves is very important. There are deeper issues about being conscious of the choices that we make. And if we think that there's something wrong in this book with how the parliamentary system works, if somebody has that opinion, or if they think it's absolutely right and it goes along fine as it is, then either people will think, well, I need to do something to change it, or it looks good as it is.
Now, in this book, it's not only the politicians in the legislature who are at one another's throats. The bureaucrats responsible for producing the Hansard are also feuding. Can you describe a bit of that storyline?
Certainly. The Hansard itself is usually a small division within legislatures. It's nonpartisan. Many people don't know what Hansard is. I mean, within government, they don't know what Hansard is. So they're not often noticed. And when they are noticed in the House, sometimes it's either thanked very briefly for their services during a sitting, or there's an error in what you produced. Those are the only two kinds of attention. And so they're a kind of invisible group, and they can only fight amongst themselves. Nobody else cares about them, really.
Is there an excerpt from one of these memos you could read to us?
Sure. So this is a letter that comes from one of the two editors, and it's to the director. The editors were asked to reply to a new style book that was imposed by the director. Now, it was imposed because the two editors didn't want to get along with him and make changes. So here's what one of the editors has to say. You asked for a response, and I've got some things to say. I don't like some of the changes. What's wrong with administration? You want a lowercase a? All right. There's not a problem there, but I still don't see the reason. You also talked about effect and affect, how we're to know their different uses, and inquiry and inquiry. When you're scrolling through a document that's thousands of words long, you don't pay too much attention to one letter. The world won't turn upside down or collapse if we leave effect for effect. I take your point about being consistent, but tell that to the transcribers when you have your meetings. Dashes. I use them. Why not? The members don't speak in complete sentences. But the other editor likes to use colons and semicolons. Well, dashes are real speech, and that's what we're transcribing, not lectures. There are all kinds of points you raised, but basically, this comes down to attitude and professionalism, and those are hard things to merge. Good luck. Meet us on some middle ground, and maybe we'll be able to do it. But look, no one's complained about the Hansard up to now, so why all the fuss?
Boy, what's alarming about that is I think that anybody who's ever worked for any length of time in a bureaucracy will completely relate.
Well, that's good. For me, anyway.
Do you think, in fact, more than just that we should embrace many different sorts of novels, do you think the novel actually needs to continue to evolve in order to remain relevant, especially in this day and age when there are so many, many different forms of narratives all around us?
I think the novel can't help but evolve. That's what it's been doing since whenever you want to backdate it to. It has evolved to include a book like mine. But it could be a book that's based on junk mail. It could be a book that incorporates post-it notes. It could be like B.S. Johnson's novel, The Untouchables from 1969, which is a box with paper in it, and you can shuffle the contents as you wish and come up with whatever story you want to. I mean, that's from 1969. You could just as easily think of any form that the novel can be. There is no limit to it. We came up with this term, the novel. It's a fictional creation. Like, it didn't come out of a stone or get handed to us in some fashion. We invented it. So since we invented the term, why don't we just reinvent it as we go? It's ours. We made it up, after all. It's as much a creation, that term, the novel, as a novel itself is. So we're going to move ahead. We're going to evolve. There's not a doubt in my mind that that's what will happen. I don't think we should give up on our capacity as imaginative human beings to take something that looks old and to give it a new interior as well as an exterior. I don't think novelty just for novelty's sake is very interesting, but something original, now that is interesting.
Jeff Bercy is the author of Verbatim, a novel. He spoke with N. Strange Champs.